432, chapter 23, Pasuk Aleph. Last time we were learning about kosher versus not kosher, the treifa, why you give it to the dogs, and so on. Okay, now this Pasuk teaches us a few different dinim. The Pasuk says, Leisisa Shema Lashov. Do not accept a false report. Al Tashis Yotchim Rashu, do not extend your hand with a wicked person. Lies Eid Chamas, to be a corrupt witness.
So that's what the word venal means, corrupt.
Venal
is evil, corrupt, crooked.
Who's teaching you?
I don't know. Depends on yes.
Well, he thinks everybody knows what the word means. If I would have made a bet tonight,
okay,
I would have won a lot of money.
Okay, first of all, the Rashi comments in the Gemara that the first thing the Pasuk teaches us, Leisisa Shema Lashov, do not accept a false report, meaning you're not allowed to accept Lashon Hara. Basically, the Gemara says, a person who listens to Lashon Hara, evil tongue, about somebody else, is worse than the one that says it. Because if there's no listener, there is no talker. There is different levels of Lashon Hara. There is Lashon Hara, which means you speak bad about somebody and it's true. That's called Lashon Hara. Then you have something, to a certain extent, is worse than that. That's called Motzi Shemra. Motzi Shemra is when you speak bad about somebody and it's not even true. That's even worse. Lashon Hara is, it's true. You're speaking bad about the person. The Gemara says, Lashon Hara kills three people. The Gemara says, in Erchin, it kills three people. It kills the talker, it kills the listener, and the one they're talking about. So the commentaries ask, we discussed this in the past by other laws, the commentaries ask, the talker I understand because he's saying Lashon Hara. The listener I understand why it punishes him because no listener, no talker. So he's aiding the talker. So the question is, Nebuch, the poor guy they're talking about, why should he, so to speak, get killed? Why does the Gemara use the expression, it kills all three of them? So Rabbi Yehuda explains that speech is, like we said in the past, is a power of revelation. In other words, if I have an idea and I don't say it, it's not revealed. If I have a feeling and I don't say it, it's not revealed. Speech reveals something. Torah is teaching us over here a very interesting concept, and that is, if a person has a bad trait, but people don't speak about it, it stays dormant, it stays quiet, it stays buried. When people talk about somebody else's bad, what actually happens is they're revealing that person's bad. So even the person they're talking about is also punished, so to speak. Not punished, but he suffers from it, because now his bad is coming out into the open. So the Pasuk says, and this is one of the many different places in Chumash, where it says that you're not allowed to, but here it says, Leisisa Shema Lashov, meaning that here the Isser is not speaking about the talker, here we're speaking about the listener, and the person's not allowed to accept Lashon Hara. And therefore, the commentaries explain, there's a Gemara, Blazer ben Azayah says, whoever accepts Lashon Hara is worthy of being thrown to the dogs. And he says, where do we learn it out from? Because what did we just finish in the Pasuk before this? La'kelev tashlichon oisei. The Pasuk said, if you have dead meat, carcass in the vela, you give it to the dogs. But right afterwards it says, don't listen to Lashon Hara. So the fact that the Torah puts these two things next to each other teaches us that whoever accepts Lashon Hara is worthy of being thrown to the dogs. The Gemara says, Rabbi Elazar ben Azayah.
Who accepts it or says it?
Here he's speaking about accepting it. Okay? What? Yeah? I'm listening.
You have a friend, and you're discussing a situation, basically,
it depends.
Yeah,
it depends.
I mean, isn't it intention is the key?
Yeah.
It's not only intention, it's intent. For instance, the Gemara says, and this Shulchan Aruch brings down, something which is public knowledge by three people, it's not really Lashon Hara. Because once three people know about it, everybody knows about it. But halacha says that if your intention though is to publicize it more, then it's still lashon hara. Okay, now there are times that halacha says it's okay to speak lashon hara. For instance, if somebody has a knack of messing people up in business, okay, they're dishonest in business, and you know about it, and somebody asks you, do you think I should go into business with this guy? And you want to be a nice guy, say, oh, he's a great guy, you know, you should go into business with him, and he's going to get messed up because of you. Or, when it comes to shidduchim, or it comes to other things, halacha says, if your intention is not to bring out bad about the person, but your intention is to save the person that's asking you the question, and that's between you and God, obviously, because Hashem knows what your real intention is, then it's not lashon hara. If somebody that you know doesn't pay back debts, and somebody says, should I lend the money, when you know the guy doesn't pay back a debt? So then you have an obligation to say, but it also depends, you know, you could say bad by not saying good, and what they read in between the lines, or openly saying bad. So people have to be very careful. It's a very, very fine line between, you know, lashon hara. But basically here what the pasuk is saying, a person should not speak lashon hara, and not in the here he's speaking about accepting lashon hara, because that's the way you get a hatred for somebody when you hear bad about the person. Now, what happens? That's one thing. Another thing Rashi learns, that the Gemara learns from this pasuk, is also, a judge is not allowed to hear one litigant, not in the presence of the other one. Because when a judge listens to one side of the story, before the other one comes, you already formulate an opinion in your mind based on what you heard.
Nice.
So the din is, the law is, once a judge listens to one side of a story without the other litigant present, he automatically becomes disqualified from the Bezdin. Unless, if this was called Zabla, where each one picks it up, then there are opinions, to Machlekes, but there are opinions that say, your Dayan, the one you pick, can hear your side of the story, because he's not anyway the final judge, because the final judge is the third guy, who Taka is not allowed to hear it. Therefore, I'll tell you a little secret. If a rabbi knows there's a court case coming up and he doesn't want to get involved for political reasons, he doesn't want to get involved. Because he has a right to say, I don't want to get involved. But what he does is he tells the guy basically to tell him his side of the story, and once he listens to his side of the story, he's automatically disqualified. So he says, well, I'm sorry, I can't sit on the case because I already heard your side of the story. Yeah? Quick.
In your business as a rabbi or like a psychologist, when you hear so many stories about people, that people come and confide to you.
But you have to listen to both sides.
Uh-huh. But if
any person.
If the other side doesn't want to come. Like in my.
But you still cannot formulate an opinion. Let's say it's husband and wife, yeah? And let's say the wife comes first and she tells you, without having the husband there defending himself, because once he comes and defends himself, it's a whole different story.
Sure,
or vice versa. Yeah. Unless if your purpose is to help somebody.
Well, if it's your business.
If you're counseling somebody to be able to help them, and part of the problem, you have to hear what the problem is, because if you don't hear the problem, how are you going to help them? Then it's not lashon hara. Of course not. What?
Rabbi, I know the Gemara precedes American judicial...
Okay, but make it fast, no?
Well, I'll make it fast. Let me set up an incident for you. The judge has told the district attorney of the city of Los Angeles that Joe Blow is being tried for murder in the first degree.
Mm-hmm.
And the district attorney is prosecuting him. He's bringing in witnesses to the judge and the jury that saw this guy presumably kill Joe Blow. Okay?
Yeah, no.
So on this day, Monday of the week, the district attorney is going to bring in all his clients, all his friends, and those who saw or were part of the murder.
No.
And then Wednesday, the defense attorney is going to...
Okay, so what's your question? Tell me the question.
It's not a question.
Oh, then forget it. I'm not interested.
Why?
Okay.
Why?
Because we're not having a secular court here. Another thing it says like this. A judge cannot listen to one side without the next. Another thing, it says what we learn after this pasuk, because the Torah does say the expression leisisa shem hashav, which also means don't mention God's name in vain or falsely. Shav is actually falsely. The Gemara learns out from here, you're not allowed to allow somebody who lies to swear in Beis Din. Because by allowing him to swear, you're forcing him to say God's name in vain, which is forbidden. And therefore, so what do? So the din is, if somebody has to swear, normally we learned in Beis Din, you never swear and take money. You always swear to get out of payment. There's no such concept in Torah. Let's say, if I say you owe me money, and you deny it, so I can't swear that you owe me money and take it. The guy who's defending himself swears that I don't owe you money, and he pays. He doesn't pay. You don't swear and take. Okay, that's the halacha. You never swear in Torah and take. You always swear to get out of payment. But the exception of this rule is, if the guy that's supposed to swear cannot swear, because he's a liar and Beis Din won't let him swear, or it's a situation where the guy can't swear because he doesn't know. So then the din is, then Beis Din says to the other guy, because we're not allowing this guy to swear, either because he's a liar or he doesn't know, and he can't swear. So then, not he doesn't know because he's forgot. I'll give you an example in a second. So then the din is, Shekenegdo Nishba V'Notel. Then the other guy swears and takes. But Beis Din does not allow a guy who's a liar to swear. Now, the Gemara says, I'll soon discuss it. There is an argument in the Gemara, what's called Choshid Amamona, Choshid Ashvuasa or not. Meaning, a guy who's not a proven liar, you suspect him of being dishonest in money, do you allow him to swear or not? Choshud. He's only suspected. So there's one opinion in the Gemara that says, even a guy who's suspected in falsifying money, but we allow him to swear. Because the world trembled when Hashem said in the Ten Commandments, don't mention my name in vain, meaning don't swear falsely, the whole world trembled. So therefore, there was one opinion in the Gemara is, that if a guy is only choshud, we only suspect him of cheating, we allow him to swear because that we don't go that far to say he's going to swear falsely. But a guy who's definitely a liar, Beis Din does not allow him to swear, and then the other guy has to swear. But the other case, like I said, where the guy can't swear. We mentioned this case not too long ago. Somebody is working for me. And I have to pay him $1,000. I don't have $1,000 to pay him. So I tell the storekeeper, do me a favor, pay him the $1,000. Okay? Now, the storekeeper comes to me and says, you owe me $1,000. I gave the worker $1,000, so you have to pay me $1,000. The worker comes to me and says, nobody ever gave me $1,000. You owe me $1,000 for my work. Now, so this guy says, you owe me $1,000. This guy says, you owe me $1,000. Me, the poor guy, I don't know if he gave him or not. Now normally, if he's coming to me to ask me for money, I would be able to swear I don't owe you the money. And if this guy comes to me, I would be able to swear I don't owe you the money. But I don't know who owes whom the money because I didn't do anything. I told him to give him $1,000. He says he never gave it. He says he gave it. And they're both coming to me to take $1,000. Okay, so the din is, I can't swear. So what do? Each one of them swears, and I have to pay $2,000. There's no choice. Each one swears, because over there, I can't swear. So over there, you have to swear and take. So this guy swears that he gave him the money, the storekeeper. The worker swears he never got the money, and I have to pay him both $1,000. But I know, but that's not my fault.
Or forget, yeah. It falls on you.
The problem, but then you swear and take. Or if the guy is a proven liar, Bezdin doesn't let the guy swear, and then the other guy has to swear and take. Because if not, the Gemara says a very simple thing. Everybody will go over to a known liar, okay, and everybody will say to him, you owe me money. Now normally you swear to get out of it, right? Bezdin's not going to let this guy swear, so what do you make him just pay? So everybody will take advantage of this guy and say, you owe me $1,000, you owe me $1,000. So Bezdin says, 1 minute, we're going to make you swear. And nobody's going to swear falsely if they don't really, you know, own the money. So that's what it says over here. So, so the Torah teaches us in this pasuk, in this part of it, Lesisa Shema Shov, which simply does means don't accept a false report. The Torah teaches us a bunch of dinim. Number one, you're not allowed to accept Lashon Hara. Number one, a judge cannot listen to one side before the, without the other side there. And the third din, in the same four words, is that you cannot allow a person who lies to swear. And then it says, Altashis Yotcha Im Rasha, you cannot put your hand, extend your hand with a wicked person, Lias Eid Chamas, to be a corrupt witness. Now, over here what it means is, you see clearly from the Torah, that the Torah calls a Rasha an Eid Chamas, a corrupt witness. This itself shows that a Rasha is not allowed to be a witness. A person who is a Rasha is not allowed to be a witness. And we're going to soon discuss what is the definition of a Rasha. If he transgresses biblical sins, he's biblically not kosher. If he transgresses rabbinic sins, he's rabbinically not kosher. But we'll soon see what type of sins we're talking about. Now he says, even if you know, and here the Torah says another din. The Torah is teaching us you cannot, not only is the Torah teaching us a Rasha is not a kosher witness. The Torah says you cannot be a second witness together with a Rasha to testify, even if you know that in this case the Rasha is saying the truth. In other words, what happens if a Rasha and somebody else saw a murder? Or they saw a loan of money? You know, that something happened. Or that somebody damaged somebody. You are not allowed to go testify together with a Rasha, even though you know what he's saying is true. Why? Because Bezdin will accept this witness a different time when he's lying. In other words, you can't do what the Torah says, because sometimes this is going to happen, that another time the Bezdin will paskin together with him. So therefore, there's only one witness, because a Rasha basically is not a kosher witness. And not only that, a person who's not a kosher witness is no witness at all. Now, one witness, we learned in the past, does not extract money. If I say you owe me $1,000, and I have two witnesses that you owe me $1,000, you have to pay me the $1,000. If I have one witness that you owe me $1,000, the Torah says, Bezdin does not extract money based on one witness. What one witness does, if I have one witness that you owe me $1,000, you have to swear that against the witness that you don't, and then you don't have to pay. But one witness does not extract money. So if there's two witnesses, one's a tzaddik and one's a Rasha, so the Rasha really disqualified. So there's only you as one witness. You as one witness cannot extract money. But Bezdin, thinking that you and him are kosher witnesses, are going to extract money, so you're causing Bezdin to do something against halacha. And therefore it's forbidden. Okay, so therefore, a person who definitely cannot go together with the Rasha. Now, what is considered a Rasha in the Torah? That he's not a kosher witness. Anybody who transgresses willingly a biblical sin is a Rasha, not allowed to, not kosher to testify. A person that ever swore falsely, that's it. He's automatically disqualified. A person that false testimony, not a kosher witness. A person who takes interest without the leniencies of Heter Isk and so on, not allowed. The Gemara says, it doesn't apply today too much, but the Gemara says a shepherd, is not a kosher witness.
No.
No. Why? Because most shepherds graze their animals in other people's properties. So they're stealing. The Gemara says, Stam Raya, a regular shepherd is a ganef. No, but that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. What happened to Chumash with Lot? Why did the shepherds of Lot and Avram get into a fight? Because Lot. Therefore, it says Stam Raya, not every shepherd. Stam Raya means, and the rule is, a shepherd is a ganef. If you know he's not, then he's not. But a regular shepherd, the Gemara says, you can assume. Now, another thing is, a professional gambler is not a kosher witness. Not a guy, the Gemara says, Masacha Bekuvia, Posseleidus. What does it mean? A person who gambles is a person that really doesn't care about money. It's easy come, easy go. So the Gemara says, because such a guy can't be a proper witness, because money doesn't mean anything. So he'll testify, it doesn't mean anything. But that's only, halacha says, if it's his profession. A guy that goes to Vegas every so often and gambles, and they lose money, it's not considered a posel eidus. Then there's another interesting Gemara. The Gemara says, ha'eichel b'shuk doma lekelev uposel eidus. The Gemara says, a guy who eats in the street is like a dog, because he has no human dignity, and he's not a kosher witness. Mm-hmm. But Taisa says it's only if you nash a candy in the street. If you eat a meal in the street. Which means, by the way, according to halacha, if a guy would walk in the street with a hot dog and bun, which is halachically a meal because you washed, you're a dog. Taisa calls you derma lekelev, you're like a dog, and you're not kosher to testify. Because you don't have human dignity.
What about inside a car?
No, that's not a problem.
Why ladies are not kosher witnesses?
Now, why aren't women, while we're on the subject?
Is it safe to ask?
There's five women here. It's just,
a bus is a public place? Like a shul?
A bus is not a public place. Now, a person, there's a lot of people, the whole concept of Eidus, we didn't get into all the dinim last time, but there's a lot of dinim in witnesses that what's called Gezer Sekosif that doesn't make sense, and this is it. The Gemara says women are not kosher to testify. Why? Because the Torah says Va'amdu Shneho Anoshim. The Torah, when it speaks about witnesses, says the two men should stand in front of the court and testify. Which, by the way, teaches us that witnesses have to stand when they testify. But because it says Va'amdu Shneho Anoshim. The Torah says, Agzeres HaKosef, totally illogical, women are not kosher to testify. Relatives are not kosher to testify. Moshe and Aaron, very nice Jewish boys, came from a nice family, they were very honest people, they never lied in their life, but Moshe and Aaron witnessed the murder, there's no witnesses.
You mean they're not allowed to testify?
Together, the relatives cannot testify. Relatives cannot testify.
Why women not?
Because there's a kosef. No, there's no reason. Mm-hmm. Just like there's no reason why relatives can't. Because the commentaries ask, if you're talking about honesty, I mean, Moshe and Aaron, you know, who's going to...
Relative, I can understand.
But the same thing, women are not allowed to testify. Relatives cannot... A Jewish king is not allowed to testify. There's a lot of dinim who's kosher to testify, who's not allowed to testify. We said before, one witness does not extract money, only a vow, an oath. Two witnesses could extract money. According to halacha, two witnesses and 100 witnesses are equally powerful. That means 100 witnesses is not stronger than two. If 100 witnesses say, Reuven killed Shimon, and two witnesses say, Levi killed Shimon, no, they cancel each other out. 2 and 100 are exactly the same. There's no testimony. Why? Because 2 and 100 are the same. There's another din which is even wackier. If you have 100 witnesses, and 2 of the 100 are relatives, all 100 are no good. There's a rule in the Gemara, which the Gemara says clearly is Exedus Akasuf, Eidus Shabatla Miktsasa, Batla Kula. 1 minute. I didn't say anything yet. Eidus shebatla miksasa batla kula means witnesses that if part of them are nullified of the group, the whole witness is no good. And that's why, that's only though, so the Gemara asks, so what should two relatives that saw murder do? Because if they go, they're going to disqualify all the witnesses. So the Gemara says, only one goes. Only one goes, 1 second. If you ever buy a chuppah, if you ever buy a wedding, they call up two witnesses to be the witnesses for the ring giving, yes? For the kedushin. And why, what's the purpose of designating the two witnesses? And sometimes they'll even add to the exclusion of all others. What's the reason why they call up, they designate witnesses? For a very simple reason. Under the chuppah, you have a father standing, the father-in-law standing, brothers are standing, cousins are standing. These are all non-kosher witnesses. They're all relatives. So if you're giving the ring, and the father is watching the way, or the cousin or the father-in-law, whoever it is watching the ring giving, and they're having in mind, I'm going to witness the ceremony, they disqualify the whole testimony. So therefore, what do? By designating these two witnesses, you automatically disqualify anybody else in the room from being a witness. And by disqualifying it, you don't have 100 witnesses anymore. All you have is two witnesses, and that's it. And by the way, they even tell you, a lot of times when they call up witnesses to be, that's why you always, you know, when you are doing a chuppah, and you need witnesses, you have to make sure they're 100% Shomer Shabbos, and 100%, you know, kosher witnesses. Because if they're not Shomer Shabbos, they're not kosher witnesses. If they're not, you know, so what do they do? A lot of times they make a joke out of it. But when they call up the witnesses, guys, when they're walking up, the guys will say, hey, do tshuva. You know, it says in halacha, it's brought down in halacha, that the witnesses, especially it's like such an important thing of a kedushin or a gittin or whatever, they tell them, do tshuva in your mind. Because tshuva takes a second in your mind. So then, at least you're not a rush anymore. Because if you're a rush, you might not be a kosher witness. So therefore, they tell you to be maharid b'tshuva, and you're maharid b'tshuva, and then, you know, it works. So
for the relative, how far does it go? I mean, cousin, third cousin, fourth cousin?
In halacha, there is levels of relatives. To put it in halachic terms, there's rishon b'rishon, sheni b'sheni, shlishi b'shlishi. Now, rishon b'rishon are two brothers. Sheni b'sheni are two cousins. Shlishi b'shlishi are second cousins. So, l'chatchila says in halacha, even a distant relative you don't take. Even distant relative you don't take. Even though, even mechutanim, even though in Shulchan Aruch it says they're kosher, but the custom is not to take them. What do you mean? If my son married a girl, so me and the girl's father, we're not related. His daughter married my son, but we're not related. They're called mechutanim. Even mechutanim, the custom is not to use them as witnesses together. Why? They're not related. There's absolutely no relationship between them. But, mishpacha.
So later down the line, if they find out, let's say the kosher witnesses were relatives, just in case, that means the whole thing is nullified?
Yeah, then the question, this is what they do when you have cases of people that were married, and let's say it wasn't done with kosher witnesses, and then they never got divorced with a get. They never got divorced with a get, right? And then the woman remarried somebody else.
So if the witnesses aren't kosher, it
was now the question is, if they have kids, are those kids mamzerim or not?
From the second marriage.
Yeah. Man, boy marries girl, right? They divorce, but no get. Then she remarries somebody else and has kids. Oh. Now, are those kids mamzerim or not?
Adultery, yes.
So now, this, in fact, I had somebody called me, Mamish, 20 minutes before I got here. A case like this, one of his people, he just found out that the guy's daughter wants to get married, came from, it was the guy's second marriage, and the woman never got a get from her first husband. So now the question, could he do a wedding? Maybe because of mamzer. Right? But the question is, who did the first wedding? Because if it was an Orthodox wedding, there's an assumption usually that the rabbi is going to make sure they're kosher witnesses. But by other groups of Judaism, they're not very particular who's the witness. They'll use a sister, a brother, a cousin, an aunt, an uncle, you know. So then, even though lechatchila they need a get, but you're not going to say the kids are mamzerim. Because they never had a kosher wedding, because the witnesses were never kosher. And that's what they, in today's world, where people break up marriages, Jews, and they never get a proper get because they're not religious, but they never get a kosher get, and then they go marry somebody else, so then the question is it adultery, is it not adultery? Can they stay married, can not stay married?
When you talk about court cases, I mean, I understand relatives could be biased, but what about, like, good friends? I mean,
relatives are not kosher because of bias. Relatives are not kosher because the Torah says relatives are not kosher. That's it. There's no logic behind it.
So what about like good friends of the person?
A good friend.
Let's say a person's murdered and his two friends.
They have an obligation to testify. Later on we'll learn in Chum, not over here. But in Dvarim, there's a negative commandment, a very sharp negative commandment. If you know testimony, you don't go to testify, the Torah punishes you a lot. If you know testimony, it could be your best friend. But if you know testimony, you have to go. You're not allowed to conceal a testimony, an edus that you know. What?
So if a guy walks into a store and two women are running the store and he steals, they can't witness against him?
In Bez Din, not as witnesses.
But they could take a case to the Bez Din.
Sure, they can take the case to the Bez Din.
They would have to have other witnesses.
Correct.
But what if there's no other witnesses?
What happens if I lend you $1,000? What happens? One second. Let's get it. Reuven kills Shimon and there's no witnesses. No? So what happens?
But then the guy's going to keep stealing from there.
And the guy's going to keep killing.
So even in the base.
So that's God's business.
What about if the guy says, I've committed and there are two witnesses, but the rabbi is not kosher?
Doesn't matter, as long as the witnesses are kosher. That's why. No, I'm going to explain to you something. You know, I would say Chabad doesn't classify. We don't like the words Orthodox, Conservative, Reform, whatever. But sometimes, and this is a very important thing that comes up a lot. Sometimes a person, for lack of better words, just for clarification, a guy will have a Reform rabbi doing his wedding, a person's wedding, but the guy, the chassan, let's say, has a firm relative. And he knows the Reform rabbi is not going to have kosher witnesses, correct? Mm-hmm. So he wants that there should be kosher witnesses by the chuppah.
Exactly.
That's a very terrible idea.
Why?
And it's not, you don't do it. We don't allow it. You tell him, let him have tray for witnesses. I mean, non-kosher witnesses. Why? It's a very simple thing. There's a large divorce rate in America, correct? Now, later on, the chances, if the people are not frum, there's slim chances they're going to get a kosher get. Right? So let's say there's 50% divorce rate. Okay? So there's a very strong chance that this couple is going to get divorced without a kosher get, and they're going to go marry somebody else. Now later on, when the question comes up, the rabbi later on in life will ask, who did your wedding? A Reform rabbi. So they're going to assume, then you can assume that the witnesses are not kosher. So the wedding is not kosher, and they're going to permit either the woman to remarry, they're going to say the kids are not mamzerim. But if you have kosher witnesses, that means the kedushin was valid. But they're not going to know that because they're going to hear a Reform rabbi did the wedding, so they're going to think then the witnesses are not kosher, it's not a kosher chuppah. So then the kids wouldn't be mamzerim when they are mamzerim. So therefore, if a non-frum rabbi, let's put it that way, if a non-frum rabbi is not doing the wedding, it's encouraged not to have kosher witnesses.
So isn't there a din that if they live together long enough?
So that's a question, but still not enough for mamzerim.
No.
No. It's not enough perhaps to make a mamzer.
I'm not getting married.
Okay. Now.
Can witnesses at a wedding be related to the bride or the groom?
No. Okay. Witnesses are not only not allowed to be related to each other. They're not allowed to be related to anyone in the whole case. They can't be related to the chosin, they can't be related to the kala, they can't be related to the borrower, they can't be related to the lender. Nobody, anytime there's witnesses in the case.
So your example with the reform rabbi that the guy had his cousin be there, it wasn't a kosher witness anyway.
Right.
Maybe it was for him.
No, but I'm saying, if the guy said, I want to have two kosher witnesses there, it's a bad idea.
But what can you tell him?
There are rabbis today, you should know.
Really?
Not, they're not two rabbis. You're right, they're not rabbis. There are no rabbis today. There are rabbis that when it comes to non-from people, they advise, we don't agree with this philosophy, but they have a philosophy, it's better to have non-kosher witnesses there.
Regardless of what kind of
way. Right.
But it's not
divorce. Why? Because the chance of divorce, and they're not from, and they won't get a get. I mean, we agree, you do a wedding, you do it right. But if, that's if you're doing the wedding. But if a non-from rabbi is doing the wedding, then it's better that they shouldn't have kosher witnesses. Because then, it could only be a big problem later. Okay, now, obviously, when does a person become a non-Rasha? When he does tshuva. There is a very interesting story. There's a very interesting story in the Gemara. Where's the Gemara? The Gemara is in the Dorim. The Gemara tells a story like this. A guy gave, listen to the way people, how corrupt people were in the olden times. Gemara tells a story, there's a guy that lent, gave his friend $100, 100 golden coins it was, to watch. Later on, the guy came and says, you know, can you give me back my 100 dinar, 100 golden coins? The guy says, what are you talking about? I don't know you a thing. I don't know you a thing. So, they went to Rava. No, I'm sorry. He said, I gave it back to you already. He didn't say, I don't know you. He said, basically he said, I don't know you, but he said, I gave it back to you. And he said, no, you didn't. He said, yes, I did. So they went to Rava. So Rava said, okay, you have to swear that you returned it. That's what you're saying, you gave it back to him. You have to swear that you gave it back to him. And then you won't have to pay. The guy had his walking stick. So the guy says to the other litigant, he says, maybe you hold my stick while I swear. I want to swear that I returned it to you. So do me a favor, I need my hand to swear, so here, take my stick and hold my stick while I swear. So the guy said, okay. He holds the stick. The guy swears that whatever I owed you, I gave you back.
It was the stick.
Whatever I owed you, I gave you back. The guy got so angry that because he knew the guy was lying because he didn't return it. He started hitting with the stick and the stick cracked open and all the money fell out. Wow. That means when he gave him the stick to hold, he did give him back the money.
Wow.
He did give him back the money. So he didn't swear falsely. No, you heard that my mom did. He didn't swear. He didn't.
He was waiting for them to give him a stick back then.
Right, he was going to give him back the stick. But then he didn't swear falsely because he swore. So that time, the Gemara says, they made a takana that when a guy swears, they have to swear with what the Bezdin thinks you're swearing, not what you think. In other words, Bezdin understood what it means, I gave it back, that you gave it back before. Right, not... But the guy was so smart, he devised a trick that he swore honestly, and he thought, it backfired, he thought he was going to get back the stick with all the money in it. It's a story in the Gemara with Rava. So he made a takana, when a person swears, it's al das Bezdin. Bezdin says to him, it's based on the intent of Bezdin, not on what you thought. Okay, then there's also a din. Okay, Next pasuk. You're not allowed to be a follower of majority for when it comes to even. There's a lot of dinim involved in this pasuk. And you should not respond to grievance by listening to the majority. By yielding to the majority to pervert the law. Okay, it sounds very funny in English. Now, Rashi says what it means is like this. Rashi himself says a lot of midrashim over here. The simple meaning is, in order to make a guy guilty in capital punishment, you need a majority of two. That's what the Torah says. They see achrei rabim l'rois. There's a majority that you don't follow for evil. Meaning if it's a majority of one. What does this mean in practical halacha? The minimal court to kill somebody is 23. The bezdin is to be 23 to kill somebody. If 12 say guilty and 11 say innocent, you don't kill him. If 12 say innocent and 11 say guilty, then you don't kill him. But when it comes to Leroy's, for bad, for punishment, the Torah says, you need a majority of two. Which means, in order for a bezin of 23 to kill, you need 13 saying guilty and 10 saying innocent. But if it's 12 and 11, the Torah says here, you don't kill. That's the simple meaning of the pasuk. Okay? Now, another thing is, sometimes, like Rashi explains, sometimes you could have majority of two, then you do punish him. Otherwise, a majority of one, you don't kill him because of that. Now, v'leisan ariv also means that you cannot, like Rashi explains, what does this mean? You don't argue on the head of the bezdin. Because you notice the word riv should be with the yud. But it says leisan arav, meaning you're not allowed to argue on the head of the bezdin. So therefore, what is the din? The din is when it came to capital punishment, when you took the head count, you know, in the vote, you had to start from the lowest judge. I don't mean the younger, the lowest judge, whatever he was. Meaning, you start with his opinion, and you move upward. The last one that had to say his opinion was the head of the Beis Din. But if he said his opinion first, then you couldn't argue on him. But if your opinion was different than him, you had a problem. So therefore, what the Torah is teaching us, by saying, Leisan al-Riv, al-Rav, you're not allowed to disagree, meaning, the Torah is teaching us, this is only capital punishment, by the way, not by anything else. By capital punishment, you start with the lowest, and you move up. In addition to that, then you get the real, honest opinion of everybody. Here, there's another interesting halacha. There's a din. And this again doesn't, well, it makes sense, but it's illogical, but it makes a little sense. If all 23 say guilty, you don't kill them. If the court says, all 23 members of the Beis Din say the guy is to get killed, you don't kill him. If 22 say kill him, and one says don't, you don't kill him. So the Gemara says, from this pasuk we learn out a very strange halacha. What happens, Bezdin's hearing a case, and I think the guy's innocent. But all 22 say guilty. Now, if I want to be smart, I can say publicly guilty, making it unanimous guilty, which would make him innocent, which is really what my opinion is. Right? Because I believe he's innocent. But the problem is, if I say innocent and 22 say guilty, they're going to kill him.
That's if you're the last guy.
Doesn't matter. If you know already where it's heading. Okay. Let's say, right? You know already where it's heading. And everybody's saying guilty. So you can come along and say, listen, I think he's not guilty. But if I say not guilty, they're going to kill him because 22 verses 1. But if I say guilty, then they won't be able to kill him and I'll get the way I want. So the Torah says you're not allowed to do that.
If all of them say guilty, he's not guilty.
We said if the whole Bezin says guilty, you don't kill him.
Because
the Torah says it's not your opinion. Your opinion is that he's not guilty, you have to say not guilty.
So they wouldn't write him down, they would just have to basically announce it. They wouldn't write their vote guilty or not guilty.
But nobody knows. Nobody knows.
So it's a sign.
But if the majority says guilty, then he's guilty.
If you think he's innocent, the
majority. Right, that's why you have to say innocent. But you can't change your opinion.
You're not allowed to lie.
No, but they say here, do not be a follower of the majority for evil. So if you believe sincerely that he's innocent, and you know that if you say he's innocent, he's going
to
be killed.
But you have to say truth.
So then you say guilty because you're saving an innocent and you're not going with the majority.
I thought you were allowed to lie to save a life.
Exactly.
But here the Torah says this you cannot do.
But there are nuances in some cases.
No. Here's a clear din that if your opinion is not guilty, even though because of your not guilty opinion, they're going to kill him, and if you say guilty, they won't kill him, you have to say not guilty if that's your opinion. That's what you learn out from this pasuk.
But how do you explain do not be for majority for evil?
Oh, so it says, Rashi says, what this also means is that if you see everybody's going, the majority is going for bad, so you say, you know what, I might as well say you're also guilty because I'm going to lose anyway.
Why don't they have... It should be 23, say guilty, then he's killed. And 22 and 1, he's not.
Yeah, that's what you think. But Taurus, not like that. There's a logic. The Mefarshim explained like this. It's based on a pasuk. I mean, the Gemara says it's not the Mefarshim, even the Gemara says. The pasuk, when it speaks later on in Devarim about Bezdin, the Taurus says like this. V'shaftu ha'eda, v'hitzilo ha'eda. The people have to judge him. The people have to try to save him. Okay? So the Gemara learns from there that a Beis Din must, they have an obligation to try to find the person innocent. If there's not one person in 23 that can find anything innocent about the person, something got to be wrong. The fact that the Torah says, v'hitzilu ha'eda, you have to find a merit for the person, and not one person can find the merit, it shows it's a warped case. There's something wrong with the case. So the Torah says, if there's something wrong with it, it's not a case. So the guy's innocent. But if one guy was able to see a merit, so then the Torah says, you know, to go by the majority, it's two or more, so then you kill the guy. What?
When they're casting their votes or their verdicts each, do they do it in front of the whole assembly, or is it like they do it on where nobody knows what each one?
Only the Beis Din is there by the vote.
Right.
Not only is only the Beis Din there, it is forbidden in any court, by the way, whether it's monetary law, whether it's capital punishment, criminal, whatever it is. It is halachically forbidden to tell anybody later that, you know, I was really on your side, but the majority voted against me.
The judges don't even know how they voted.
The judges know.
So they know.
Yes, because they take the vote publicly, and the guy says, I say innocent, I say guilty, and the secretary of the Beis Din wrote down the votes to know, not who said what, but the
you mean it's publicly?
No, it's just the Beis Din.
But I mean it's verbally.
It's verbally.
Why not?
Because the Torah says it verbally, there's no purpose of writing. But that's why the guy at the end is the head judge. He doesn't care what anybody else says. He's going to say what he feels.
He's the wisest of them all.
He's the wisest of them all. So he's not going to be affected by what a lesser guy. The lesser guy will be more influenced by the head. So therefore, the din is you start from the side. So the din is like Marshal Lahavdil in the Supreme Court. Here in America, whenever there's a decision, you know exactly which judge, when it's 5-4 ruling, you know exactly which judge said what, because they write briefs and they write all this. In Torah law, there's no such thing. There's two things. Number one, in Torah law, once the Beis Din has their decision based on the majority, it becomes a unanimous decision of the entire Beis Din. There is no more split Beis Din. The din is, once the Beis Din rules based on the majority, the minority changed their opinion officially, and it becomes a unanimous Bezdin. And nobody is allowed to say, really, I was on your side. And that's, by the way, not only capital punishment, it's even in monetary Bezdin. If two people go to a Bezdin of three people, and Bezdin makes a ruling, it's a unanimous decision of Bezdin. Nobody is allowed to know who said what. And if the judge does, he's called a Russian, he's punished, and, you know, so on. So it's a whole different type of a system that the Torah says, and a lot of it is an exerce kosif. Now, there's okay, this, by the way, what I said now, this is what the Orach Chaim says. The Orach Chaim says that the guy is not allowed to do what I said. You know, he's going to say, if I say guilty, if I say innocent, they'll kill him. If I say guilty, they won't kill him. So that, the Torah says you're not allowed to do.
Is there some laws that are still sort of nebulous in the conclusion? Like in the Hobbes, the Supreme Court, they, when they try to pick a judge, they always ask, how would you do, like, in this law? Like, in Jewish law,
they don't pick a Bezdin like these Meshugoyim in Washington.
I understand that, but are there laws that are, one judge could interpret it this way and one could interpret it a different way?
Well, that's why you have difference of opinions, because everybody is interpreting.
No, but isn't there a final halacha on...
There's no such halacha that when a guy wants to be a judge, yes, what's your view on abortion? I mean, it's ridiculous. First, even in this system, it's ridiculous. Because these guys are pro-abortion, against abortion, therefore they have a right to say, this guy has to do with the laws, whatever he feels with the laws. This is all, what's your business with... basically, you're telling him what you want him to say. To be pro-abortion, anti-abortion, pro-life. I mean, all these crazy things, it's not normal. The politicians are basically saying, I will only appoint you, or nominate you, if you do what I want you to do. I mean, it's unheard of in Torah. In Torah law, the person decides, nobody can tell the judge what he should rule. And therefore, you don't pick a, you pick a judge based on, like we said, on their knowledge and their honesty and their, you know. Okay. Okay, you have to go by the majority of, like we said, by evil you don't. You have to say what you want. Every person has to say what the logic is. He can't go by the majority. And, okay. Okay, all these things we said. Okay. So that's basically this pasuk. The next pasuk, Gimel, which is a four-word pasuk, V'dol le'sed b'rivai, do not glorify, do not justify, so to speak, a destitute person in his grievance. Meaning, you shouldn't give a person, say, you know, Nebuch, the guy's a poor guy. How can I make him lose? He has no money. How can I make him pay? The guy has no money to pay, but the truth is, he is guilty. So the Torah says, you can't do anything in any way to make that the guy should be innocent just because you have rachmanis on him. That's one thing. There's a very nice klayoka over here. No, that's in the next post. I'm sorry. No, that's the next post. Okay, but the Torah basically says you cannot honor a rich person. That's not this pasuk, it's another pasuk. He can't say, oh, he's such an honorable member of the community, how can I say he's wrong? I have to make him right. You're not allowed to do all these things. You have to be honest in judgment the way it is. You can't have pity on a poor man. If he's guilty, he's guilty. If he owes the money, he owes the money. You can't say because he's poor, he doesn't have to pay the money.
What if he can't pay the money?
So then Bezin has to work out a payment schedule. Okay, then we'll start the next pasuk. There's a lot in this. Pekisiv ga shor o yivcha. If you encounter the axe of your enemy, or chamere, or his donkey, toya wandering in the desert, or what got lost basically, hashiv tishiven olay, you have to return it to him. Meaning, just because he's your enemy's donkey, you could say, oh, He's my enemy's donkey. Why should I return it to him? I don't want to return it. Let me get lost. Who cares? And I'm not stealing. I'm not doing anything. The Torah says no. You have a positive mitzvah of v'hashet teshivenu lei. You have to return it. And b'chlau, whenever the Torah says this double expression, you know, the double expression hashiv teshivenu, it means even many times. You can't say, I just did it three times already. I don't want to do it more. Hashiv teshivenu means as many times as it takes. You have to do it. Here, the pasuk happens to be talking about a Jew.
It shouldn't really make sense.
Well,
you don't
have
a name
or anything
that goes along
with
these negative
Exactly. Words. Yeah, but enemy is a very strong. Right, it's a strong term. You know, they just received the Torah. They're supposed to be pretty connected. Doesn't matter. By the way, there's a very interesting Orchamer that I knew is... One second. On the previous Pasuk, Vidalei said the Berivei, don't glorify the poor man, but even in his dispute. The Rechaim HaKadosh says a very beautiful word. He says, who is the poor man, who's his grievance against? It's against God. The poor man comes to God and says, why are you making me poor and everybody else has money and me you're making poor? Yeah? So a judge will think, you know what? His grievance is against God. So maybe I should make the poor man wrong to make God right. Because after all, if I say the poor man is right, that means God's wrong. So he says in the, down at the bottom over here, if he created me, why doesn't he give me a decent living? If so, the judge may reason that he's protecting God by his incorrect ruling. So God says to him, you know what, don't do me any favors. Don't stick up for me. I can handle myself. You give the judgment the way the judgment is supposed to be. If it's a proof that the person's right and God's wrong, so say it and let God do it. There's a famous story with the Badishavah. This lady once came into shul where the Badishavah was there, and she started arguing with God. She went to the Aron Kodesh and she said, God, you're mean, you're cruel, you make poor people, you make widows, you make orphans, you make sick people, you said thing, all the terrible things God does. She said, finally at the end of her speech, she said, God, I'll make you a deal. You forgive me for my sins, I'll forgive you for yours. So the Radishiva was listening to her. She said, that foolish lady, she could have brought Mashiach with that argument already. It was such a good argument. She said that, you know, she could have brought Mashiach and she wasted.